Greetings, my fellow reptilians. Welcome back to another episode of Reptilian Studios. Today is Science Day, my favorite day of the week. And today, as always, I prepared a few topics for us to talk about. And one of them, at least, you know, I'm going to list them all straight up. Today, I'm going to talk about Newton's Law. I'm going to talk about Maxwell equations. I'm going to talk about genome mutation. And I'm going to talk about nanotechnology. Now, I'm going to start this off with Newton's Laws of Motion. But before I talk about it, make sure you check out my Patreon at Reptilian Studios. I'm building a community of like-minded individuals. It's going to be awesome. It already kind of is. And, you know, check it out. You might like it, I guess. Yeah. So let's get into it. Newton's laws of motion are a fundamental part of physics, describing how objects move and interact with each other. These laws were formulated by Sir Isaac Newton in the 17th century and are still used today to understand the motion of everything from a ball rolling down the hill to planets orbiting the sun. So let's break down each of Newton's three laws. Newton's first law, the law of inertia. So Newton's first law states that an object will remain at rest or continue moving in a straight line at a constant speed unless acted upon by an external force. This means that objects naturally resist changes in their motion. This resistance to changes in motion is called inertia. Imagine you're in a car that suddenly stops. You feel like you're being pushed forward, right? That's because your body wants to keep moving at the same speed and in the same direction as the car was moving. It's like when you're on a swing, you keep swinging back and forth until something like the ground or someone pushing you stops you. The second law is the law of acceleration. Newton's second law explains how the motion of an object changes when it's subjugated to an external force. It states that the acceleration of an object is directly proportional to the net force acting on it and inversely proportional to its mass. In simpler terms, this law tells us that the harder you push an object, the faster it will accelerate. And the more massive an object is, the harder it is to accelerate. Imagine pushing a shopping cart versus pushing a car. This car, I mean, whatever car, is much harder to get moving because it has more mass. The mathematical equation for Newton's second law is F equals ma, where F is the net force acting on the object, m is the mass of the object, and a is the acceleration of the object. Now, Newton's third law is the law of action and reaction. Now, you're probably familiar with this already, but I need to explain it and simplify it for everybody to understand. Now, Newton's third law states that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Now, this was used like countless times across many films and movies. So this phrase is probably the reason why it sounds so familiar. But let me explain. This means that whenever one object exerts a force on a second object, the second object exerts an equal and opposite force on the first object. Picture yourself standing on a skateboard and pushing against a wall. As you push against the wall, you feel the force pushing you back. That's the wall exerting an equal and opposite force on you. This law explains how rockets work. The rockets, you know, expel gas out of its engines, and in return, the gas pushes the rocket forward. These three laws work together to describe the motion of objects in our universe, whether it's a bird flying through the sky, a car driving down the road, or a planet orbiting the sun. Newton's laws of motion help us understand why things move the way they do. So, to summarize, an object at rest stays at rest, and an object in motion stays in motion unless acted upon by an external force. Law of inertia. Number two, the acceleration of an object depends on the net force acting on it and its mass. Law of acceleration. Number three, for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Law of action and reaction. These laws are a foundation of classical mechanics and are still used to analyze and predict the motion of objects in the world around us. Whether you're playing sports, driving a car, or exploring space, Newton's laws of motion are always at work, guiding and shaping the way things move. Now, I hope you learned something about, you know, Newton's laws. This was very interesting. If not for you, then, you know, at least it was for me. So let's move on to Maxwell's equations. So Maxwell equations are a set of four, Maxwell equations are a set of four fundamental equations in classical electromagnetism that describe how electric and magnetic fields interact and propagate. These equations are formulated by a Scottish physicist, James Clerk Maxwell, in the 19th century and are crucial for understanding the behavior of electricity and magnetism in various physical systems. So let's break down each of Maxwell's equations and what they mean. Number one, Gauss's law of electricity. Now, this equation relates electric fields to the distribution of electric charges. It states that the total electric flux through a closed surface is proportional to the electric charge enclosed by the surface, divided by a constant called permittivity of free space. I think it's permittivity, but, you know, I might have, you know, mispronounced the word. In simpler terms, it tells us that the electric field around the charged object spreads outwards, and the total flux, meaning flow, of the electric field through any closed surface depends only on a charge enclosed by that surface. Number two is Gauss's law for magnetism. This equation tells us that there are no magnetic monopoles, which means that magnetic field lines always form closed loops. Unlike in electric charges, which can exist as isolated positive or negative charges, magnetic poles always come in pairs. In other words, if you imagine a hypothetical surface enclosing a magnetic pole or a magnet, the magnetic flux through that surface is always zero. Number three is Faraday's law of electromagnetic induction. This equation describes how a changing magnetic field induces an electric field. It states that the induced electromotive force, EMF, in any closed loop is equal to the negative rate of change of the magnetic flux through the loop. In simpler terms, it tells us that if we have a magnetic field that's changing over time, it creates an electric field which can cause current to flow in conductors. This is the principle behind generators and transformers. Number four is Ampere's law of Maxwell's addition. Now, this equation relates magnetic fields to electric currents and changing electric fields. It states that the magnetic field around the closed loop is proportional to the electric current passing through the loop, along with the rate of change of the electric field over time within the loop. Now, Maxwell added an additional term to Ampere's law to account for the fact that changing electric fields can also produce magnetic fields, as described by Faraday's law. This addition is crucial for explaining electromagnetic wave propagation. Together, Maxwell's equations describe how electric and magnetic fields interact and propagate through space. They form the foundation of classical electromagnetism and have profound implications for various areas of physics and engineering, including optics, electronics, telecommunications, and even our understanding of light as an electromagnetic wave. Now, Maxwell's equations also play a crucial role in the development of modern physics, particularly the theory of special relativity proposed by Albert Einstein. Einstein realized that these equations predict the existence of electromagnetic waves traveling at the speed of light, which led him to propose that the speed of light is a fundamental constant of nature and that space and time are interconnected in his theory of relativity. In summary, Maxwell equations are a set of four fundamental equations that describe how electric and magnetic fields behave and interact. They are essential for understanding the behavior of electricity and magnetism in various physical systems and have far-reaching implications for our understanding of the universe. Now, I need to get a sip of water because I'm severely dehydrated. I'm not used to talking a lot or, you know, at all. So this is kind of draining, to be honest with you. Just talking, I've been talking for a few minutes. Like, it's honestly been only 10 minutes and I'm already parched. So let's move on to something, let's say, a bit more interesting, which is gene mutation. Now, I don't care if you're just, you know, interested about this for, you know, someone that's, you know, universe forbid cripple, or you just watched, you know, The Amazing Spider-Man and wonder how that reptile got this, you know, hand back. But, you know, I'm glad you're here and I'm glad you're listening. So gene mutation, you know, this is a simple explanation of it. That kind of even rhymes. Okay, genes are like tiny instruction manuals that tell our bodies how to grow, develop, and function. They're made up of DNA, which is like a string of letters. Imagine your genes are the words in a book, and each letter in those words represents a different instruction for your body. Now, sometimes mistakes happen, just like how you might accidentally spell a word wrong, fuck it, like I just did. When writing, genes can sometimes get spelled wrong too. This is what we call a gene mutation. So what exactly is a gene mutation? So let's break it down. Number one, what is a gene? Before we talk about mutation, let's understand genes. Genes are the basic units of heredity. Like tiny packages of instruction that determine all traits from the color of our eyes to how tall we grow. Number two is, like, let's say, what is mutation? A mutation is like a change or a mistake in the DNA code. It's a bit like when you accidentally type the wrong letter in a word. Mutations can happen naturally or can be caused by things like radiation, chemicals, or even mistakes that occur when cells copy their DNA. Number three is types of mutation, which is very important. I don't know what this sound was. Point mutations. Like, these are small changes in just one or a few letters of the DNA code. It's like changing one letter in a word. For example, if the word is cat, became bat because you changed the C to a B. Insertion and deletion is number two. So sometimes extra letters get added into the DNA code or letters get removed. It's like adding or removing a letter in a word, which can completely change its meaning. For example, cat would become cart with addition of the extra R. Now, number three, let's say chromosomal mutations. Now, these are bigger changes that involve whole chunks of DNA being moved around, deleted, or duplicated. It's like rearranging or copying entire sentences or paragraphs in a book. So, moving on, we need to talk about effects of mutations. Now, there are three, which are neutral mutations, beneficial mutations, and harmful mutations. Neutral mutations. Now, some mutations don't really change anything. They're like typos that don't affect the meaning of a sentence. In our body, these mutations might not cause any noticeable differences or health problems. Now, beneficial mutations. Sometimes mutations can actually be helpful. They might give us new abilities or traits that help us survive better in our environment. Think of it like it's like finding a better way to do something. Now, harmful mutations. Unfortunately, some mutations can cause problems. They might lead to disease or conditions that affect our health or development. It's like a mistake in the instruction that leads to something not working quite right. So going back is number five, which is how mutations happened. Now, random errors is one of them. Sometimes when cells are dividing and copying their DNA, mistakes happen. It's like making a typo when writing a sentence, like I've said previously. Now, environmental factors is basically a big part of it. Exposure to things like radiation, chemicals, or certain viruses can increase the chances of mutation occurring. It's like spilling coffee on a book. It can make the words blurry or change the meaning. So, number six is, let's talk about the importance of mutation. Mutations are a natural part of life and evolution. Without them, we wouldn't have diversity of life we see around us. They're like the engine of change, driving evolution and adaptation over millions of years. Just like dogs today, you know, they all come from wolves. Like back then, there were no dogs, and that's why people. I mean, dogs are basically a prime example of forced mutation. Yes, forced mutation. People, like, with breeding, with other animals, other wolves, whatever. That's how dogs basically became dogs. Conclusion. Fuck. I skipped the bar. So, number 7 is studying mutation. So, scientists study mutations to understand how they affect our health and evolution. By learning more about mutation, we can develop better treatments for genetic diseases, understand how species evolve, and even find ways to prevent harmful mutations. So, number 8, finally, conclusion. Not finalizing, I'm glad it's over, but there's way too many tabs I wrote, and, you know, it's became a bit for a second there challenging because, you know, I look at my mic and I look back at my laptop and I don't know where I'm at. Okay, in summary, like, gene mutations are like changes or mistakes in our DNA code. They can happen naturally or be caused by environmental factors. With some mutations don't have much effect, others can lead to diseases or, you know, some bad conditions. However, mutations are also important for driving evolution and adapting in living organisms. Understanding gene mutation helps us understand more about ourselves, the world around us, and the incredible diversity of life on Earth. So, the next time you hear about gene mutation, remember they're like the typos and changes in the instruction manual of life, shaping who we are and how we evolved. Now, if that's not something interesting, I don't know what is. To be honest with you, I did not know until today what even. I knew basics, like what is gene mutation, like basic as in what I just explained and said. But even now in length, I really don't know much about gene mutations. Like I, you know, my mind immediately jumps to, like I said previously, like The Amazing Spider-Man 2 or, you know, one of my favorite romance movies, which is The Shape of Water. That movie, like that reptilian type being with a woman, it's honestly one of my favorite movies of all time. Now, this is something you probably know from, I don't know, Tony Stark in Infinity War when he presses the button on his chest and he says to Hulk guy, it's nanotechnology, you like it? So, let's get into, like, what nanotechnology is. It's basically the small science with big potential. Nanotechnology is like the magic of tiny things. It's like about working with really, really small stuff. Stuff so small you can't even see it with your eyes alone. How small are we talking? We're talking about things that are 1/1,000,000,000 of a meter small. Scientists call this range the nanoscale. To understand nanotechnology, think about how big a basketball is compared to a marble. Well, in the world of nanotechnology, that marble would be as huge as a whole basketball court. It's that small. Now, why does this tiny stuff matter? Well, it turns out that when things are really this small, they can behave in really amazing and sometimes unexpected ways. Scientists use nanotechnology to create new materials, tools, and even tiny machines. One cool thing about nanotechnology is that it's all about building things atom by atom or molecule by molecule. Imagine you have a bunch of Lego bricks and you can stack them up in any way you want to make something totally new and useful. That's kind of what scientists do with nanotechnology, except they're using atoms and molecules instead of Lego bricks. Now, so what can we do with nanotechnology? That is a really important part. Lots of things. That's basically the answer. So here are a few examples. Number one is better medicine. Now, scientists are working on tiny nanoparticles that can deliver medicine directly to where it's needed in your body. This means fewer side effects and more effective treatments for diseases like cancer. Number two is strong materials. Nanotechnology helps us make materials that are super strong and lightweight. For example, some sport equipment like tennis rackets and bicycles use nanomaterials to make them tougher and more durable. Number three is cleaner environment. Nanotechnology can help us clean up pollution and make our environment safer. Tiny nanoparticles can be used to filter out harmful chemicals from water or to break down pollutants in the air. I don't know actually how that would work, but I move on. Number four is faster computers. By making computer chips with smaller and smaller components using nanotechnology, we can make computers that are faster and more powerful than ever before. Number five is smart clothing. Imagine clothes that can change color or repair themselves. Nanotechnology could make it possible by creating fabrics with special properties at molecular level. Now, nanotechnology, in conclusion, is a field that's growing and changing, but the possibilities are endless. From improving healthcare to protecting the environment, the tiny world of nanotechnology has the potential to make a big impact on our lives. In the end, nanotechnology shows us the size doesn't always matter. That's what he said. Sometimes it's the tiniest thing that can make the biggest difference. Now, as always, I covered a bit. You know, I really, really enjoyed doing the science episodes, even though the viewership on it are basically non-existent, but I could not care. I love science. I love talking about this stuff, and I'm gonna continue doing so. Every Wednesday is Science Day. On Friday, we have an episode where I'm gonna talk about, I think, maybe vampires, maybe reptilians, how they come from, and how did the myth start. Also, Cthulhu. All hail Cthulhu. I still remember the quote from the kid from South Park. How does it go? Wait. All will be sadness, life will become death, and I will watch the crimson blood leak from your neck. Dude, that kid, a little kid, is hardcore goth. Hardcore goth. Oh my god, I love goth kids from South Park. Anyway, I hope you join my Patreon at Reptilian Studios, where we talk about everything from ninjutsu to science to movies to gothic culture to unhealthy food recipes, like food from animations and cartoons to real life. And you know, you get all my books for free if you join. You get 5 books for free. That's a good fucking deal, let's be honest. And you get a community of like-minded individuals where I want everybody to be, you know, supportive, and we're gonna help each other. We're gonna create something awesome, and you know, basically join. Check it out. Trust me, you will not regret it. It's been your boy, Tedley. And as always, I hope you enjoyed. I'm out. Peace.